When the tape ended, you were talking about
Yeah, I always had pretty good support from Dr. Horgan. I don't recall any particular issues that we got into a discussion with at this point, but we always had, I always felt we had pretty good support we always had good support from the, oh man, what was the man that came down here from Northern?
Ed Hardin?
Hardin. Interestingly enough, Hardin came from Montezuma, Iowa.
That wasn't far from Waverly?
Yeah.
So the Iowa connection opened the door to Dr. Hardin for you. What, in terms of the some of the other goals that you had for the College of Engineering?
One of the things that we want to do, and I think we've done it, of course you always want more and do better. Mm-hmm. I think we changed the graduate programs fairly drastically. They were pretty effective. Got to the point where they were reasonably effective. Mm-hmm. If you look at the total of contract research dollars, which doesn't answer everything, mm-hmm. that came into the college, you'd find, I don't know, they must have increased by a factor of 20 or something, at least.
Were these private contracts or federal government? Or
both.
Combination?
Both. Both. Mm-hmm. The feds provided a lot. National Science Foundation, as I said, we had a good inroad and a good reputation with National Science Foundation of, just like Henry, of doing what we said we were going to do.
Uh-huh. Were there any areas of research that the university excelled in that you saw or that developed?
We had some good research going that they supported in the electromagnetics area. And as the computer science department came along, they started to get some good research support. I've lost track of what's happening now. I'm not that up to date, but I suspect that's continued. I think we set a good foundation for both of them to come down.
How did the research in composite materials develop?
We hired at one point a gentleman named Larry Derzal, who had been quite involved with composite materials at Wright-Patterson. And he'd made quite a name for himself at Wright-Patterson and wanted to come back to an educational institution. And that fit together pretty well.
That was when he's in the Air Force? Or was he just started, like reading?
He started out as an officer in the Air Force, but I think most of his work down at Wright-Patterson was done as a civilian.
I see.
I'm not sure of that, but I think so.
Uh-huh. And then he brought with him that interest?
He brought that interest and not only interest, capability, and both the technical capability and the ability to get some funding for it. Mm-hmm. About that time, we were trying agitating for more space somewhere along the line, and we were starting, and we built these little round things out on the way out on the south side. You know what I'm talking?
The out by Hagedorn, is it?
Yeah.
Or, you know?
Out across from out by the back of the medical school, the south of the medical school. I don't know if we still are using all those or not.
Yeah.
We had a real problem on space there for a while. I bought a building out there on once on it's on Mount Hope.
Uh-huh.
I think we still own it.
Oh, really?
we bought a building out there because we had contract funding and we didn't have any place to put the work.
Uh-huh.
And we primarily ramrodded by a gentleman named Falco. I don't know if he's still out there or not. I think the university still owns that.
Mm-hmm.
But we built all those, I shouldn't say all those, couple pieces of them south of the medical school complex.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't the best arrangement. It split people from the from the engineering building. And they had lab space out there, and they liked the space. And if it had been in, next to the engineering building, it had been superb. But they didn't like it down there.
Because it's too remote.
Too remote. Students couldn't get down there. And we had good, the facilities turned out to be pretty good, but I'd have to tell you, it didn't work out well. I just didn't realize what the significance of splitting the...
The physical separation.
Physical separation meant.
Had an impact on the...
It did.
On the curriculum, yeah.
Had a big impact.
Some of those things you don't often think about or make the...
As I connection. Say, I don't know if we're still using that space down there or not. And of course, around this time, we were carrying all kinds of negotiation with various state agencies on, again, on a new addition to the engineering building, which eventually we got.
Yeah. Were you involved in that design or in the
yes.
fundraising? Or
yes.
Yeah.
The design and, well, that was nearly all state funds.
State funds?
The last addition to the engineering building, which made it a pretty good-sized building out there now. And, no, we... I worked with the architect, whatever good or bad about that's my problem. But I understand in talking to people there that they like it.
What international areas or international students was the College of Engineering involved in? Any areas in particular?
There was an interesting question involved here. If there is, I'm not sure what's today, I can only tell you what was then. You tell me how many Indian students or Chinese students you want, and I can get them. And it creates a problem. Some of them are pretty good students, but I'll give you an example of something. When, and this isn't quite the foreign students, but it's we had an alumni meeting in our building once, and a group of our alums went around the building and they looked at classes from, and they looked in a classroom and they thought there was an awful lot of foreign students in this classroom. And it was back in an era in which we were restricting enrollments. And they wrote a letter to President Horton, wanting to know why I was restricting enrollments and taking on foreign students at the same time. And I don't know what Horton answered, but he sent me a copy of the letter. Well, he gave us enough information that I could identify the class. And I went back and looked at that, and they may have been non-Caucasians, but the great majority of them were good, solid...
American citizens?
American and Michigan citizens. What?
Yeah, that's interesting.
And there wasn't anything I can do about that. What?
Yeah.
Horton thought that was quite funny. I don't know. I didn't think it was so funny, but he thought it was. But foreign students or graduate students, big problem. University of Michigan's had more problems than, has as many problems as anybody. The old joke is, if you want to learn to speak Urdu or Chinese, go to graduate school at Michigan in engineering, but that's not entirely fair.
Did you have, were there contacts, professional academic contacts with the other Big Ten schools? Any that the College of Engineering had?
Oh, yeah.
That were quite strong?
For example, the Big Ten Deans of Engineering always met periodically.
How often did they meet?
Well,
you think annually or?
No, much more often.
Oh, really?
At least three or four times a year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And shared all sorts of information. Mm-hmm. There are a number of engineering schools in Michigan too, mm-hmm. and we met periodically.
Mm-hmm. Michigan Tech, Lawrence Tech, some of the others.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah. And Western eventually. And mm-hmm. But I think the Big Ten needs at least 3 or 4 times a year. I don't remember for sure, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Was there efforts to work on similar programs or research, or was it just...
Well, more than anything else, we shared problems and what we might be able to do about them.
Okay.
Some people had some shrewd ideas that we learned.
Mm-hmm. They tried to...
And of course, at the same time, they're all competitive.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
What?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
But mm-hmm. I never felt that. I always thought I learned a lot more than I gave away, but I don't know.
kept your cards close to the vest. Huh? The how about some of the in the organization of the university in the institution? I know the provost plays an important role. Some of the provosts that you worked with, how supportive of they were they of the School of Engineering?
Well, within the realm of money always being tight, I worked with Winder. You're asking, right? I worked with Winder. I worked with Jake Neville.
John Cantlin?
What?
John Cantlin?
John Cantlin. Uh-huh. John Cantlin probably was, in one sense, was a little bit more sympathetic. I don't mean that in a derogatory, a little bit more sympathetic. John Cantlin had a technical education in a sense that the others did not have, and had a somewhat of a greater appreciation for mm-hmm. some of those things. Mm-hmm.
How about David Scott?
And David Scott, of course, had a total technical education in a sense. Knew a great deal about what we were up to. I was trying to think of the name of the first... Oh, we worked with, on the computer operation, I worked with Paul Miller. Mm-hmm. You'd be interested in a little anecdote here. Paul Miller was, I don't know whether his title was provost or academic vice president. And he was there when we got the money from both NSF and Hanover the first time, which he agreed with, of course. And then he left and went to West Virginia. And shortly after he got to West Virginia, there was some activity at West Virginia to raise some money for a big computer operation, and one of their people called me and he says, "What kind of response am I going to get from Paul Miller when we put the heat on him for a lot of money?" I said, my experience has been it's going to work out all right. It turns out they did put the heat on him for a lot of money, and he says, "Well, that's the way these things are." So we had him all softened up for him.
Yeah,
I was trying to think who the first academic vice president was that we worked with on the computer thing.
Mm-hmm. Think it was Paul Miller?
Hmm?
Well, you think it was Paul Miller?
No, the first one wasn't Paul Miller. We worked with Erickson at one point. He was the...
Okay.
But before that, mm-hmm. Tom Hamilton. Mm-hmm. That name mean anything to
Tom
you?
Tom what?
Tom Hamilton.
No.
Tom Hamilton created University College.
Oh.
And he left Michigan State and went to the president of the University of Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Then he left the presidency of the University of Hawaii to become the head of the Bishop Trust. Mm. You know what the Bishop Trust is?
Mm-mm.
They own most of the land in Hawaii.
Oh.
Tom Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Well, he went down with Tom Hamilton one day to the first meeting with Matilda, and what was her husband's name? Matilda Wilson, I can't think of her husband's
Dodge?
name.
Matilda Dodge Wilson, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
On what turned out to eventually be the gift to the university. That turned into first MSUO, and then the Oakland University.
Oakland University.
But it was MSUO first. Are you aware of that?
Was she at, yes, was she at Meadowbrook?
Yes, she went down to Meadowbrook. I can't think of her husband's name.
Horace Dodge, is it? Horace Dodge, was it?
Well, that was her first husband.
Okay, all right.
No, it wasn't Horace, it was John.
John, okay, all right. Maybe Horace was the earlier one.
No, Horace was John's brother.
Okay. Right.
They built the Dodge Brothers Company. I don't remember what her second husband, but I remember going down with Tom Hamlin to talk with them about what that what eventually turned into that gift.
Were you? How else were you involved when you were dean in fundraising or obtaining? Were there problems in terms of lack of an endowment that the university had?
Yeah, there always is. I mean, Michigan State doesn't have an endowment in the sense that a lot of big institutions had. You know, I don't... John Hanna always, at one time, or for a long period of time, had the position that... a lot of people thought was incorrect. And you shouldn't raise money from the private thing. It should come, their money came from the state and so on and so forth. Well, he eventually came around a little bit, but.
He stuck with the land grant concept.
He did. He, but he very clearly at one early in his tenure had that position.
As time progressed when you were dean, were there any problem areas or areas that didn't develop or faculty that left in terms of programs, went to other universities? Was that a problem or ever
no,
a problem? Or
we had some people leave, and I don't ever remember. And there was some turnover. I don't ever remember offhand here of losing a person that I thought was fundamental to the operation. Maybe we did. I don't think so. But we had a lot of turnover, or not a lot of turnover, but we lost people and we gained people from other institutions.
How long were you dean at the College of Engineering?
21 years.
21 years.
You believe that?
When did you retire, ultimately?
Well, I think it was 1989.
Were you involved in community involvement or anything after your retirement, or were you involved in any special projects for the university?
No, not for the university. I worked for a organization in Chicago for a number of years that was involved in essentially doing educational courses for engineers called the National Electronics Conference. Eventually I got tired of flying to Chicago and gave that up.
In looking back at some of your own scholarly work. Was there any area that you developed that you considered to be important? Or?
All right, say that again.
In looking back at your own scholarship and research and that sort of thing, either in writing or publishing?
Well, after I'd been here a couple of 3 years, my own research, which had been in the computer-related electromagnetics area, kind of disappeared. Because I simply couldn't do it and give the response to what I thought my administrative responsibilities were. So I didn't turn out very well as time went on. I don't think it turns out. It's a rare individual that turns out well.
Mm-hmm. What would you say in looking at how computers have changed? Did you see any of the things that we have today coming 30, 40 years ago?
Well, it's been a smooth progression, pretty much. The biggest single change, was the transition from the vacuum tube to solid state devices. Mm-hmm. Our original machine was a vacuum tube machine,
mm-hmm. like the ENIAC.
But the transition from vacuum tube machines to solid state devices meant, for one thing, that you could go, that what you built was going to be infinitesimally smaller, and then that meant at the same time that not only were they going to be smaller, but you could have a lot more of them. Mm-hmm. And having a lot more of them meant that you could do tremendous capabilities in small volumes again. Mm-hmm. I think we may be approaching the point very rapidly where we're not going to miniaturize things very much more, because we're down to the atom size now, and there's some fundamental rules here.
Computers can't be smaller than an atom.
But
they're hard to be smaller.
But the big change there was from vacuum tube devices to solid state devices.
How would you say that? How would you assess the school today?
Well, I have to beg off your. I don't go over there very much.
Okay, all right. Well,
I don't go over there. A young lady over there calls me if I get any mail she thinks I ought to look at, and I simply don't go over there.
I see.
That's by design, and mm-hmm. that's like, I
understand. Yeah. In your recent retirement, has there been any contacts at the university that you've been involved in? Sports?
I go to all the basketball games.
Yeah, you like the basketball.
Huh? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I hold football tickets, but I usually give them to my son.
Mm-hmm. In looking back at your career, is there anything that maybe you think is important you want to say for the record, or? And reflecting on your experience, you obviously had two main schools, Iowa State and Michigan State. Did you anticipate when you came to Michigan State that you would be here your entire, or almost all your career?
Obviously, I never thought about it. Well, Michigan State's been very good to me. I have no regrets in that sense at all. Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to thank you on behalf of the project for your insights and the time that we spent.
Think we got what you wanted?
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you.